Hello and welcome to this week's unseasonably hot recording of the Wallingford and District Talking newspaper. As well as bringing you items from the Wallingford Herald for today, Wednesday the 24th of June 2026, I shall be including one or two items taken from the June monthly magazine, and which hopefully will be new and of interest to those who only receive the weekly Talking newspaper recording. These pieces are read by Kate and Keith. For the regular weekly news items, your readers are Jane, Hugh and Kay. I'm David, the producer this week, and the copier will be Roger.
This is Hugh. Roadblock to Regal Rebirth. Efforts to bring Wallingford's former Regal Centre back into use have hit fresh delays, with the Town Council blaming a perfect storm of financial, safety and legal challenges. The long-running development project has been complicated by access issues involving neighbouring land owned by South Oxfordshire District Council, which the Town Council says has left the site effectively landlocked. With progress stalled, 7 years after the centre closed, councillors now believe a mixed-use scheme including flats and community space may be the only viable route forward. And the story continues on page seven of the Wallingford Herald. The community centre in Goldsmiths Lane functioned first as a cinema and later as a community centre operated by Wallingford Town Council until it closed in 2017. The council has been working on redeveloping the site for more than 7 years with the intention of bringing it back into community use, make it financially viable, and renovate the building to make it structurally safe. A new statement from the council, who up until now has repeatedly said it is too early to comment on the plans, has revealed details of why it's shut in the first place and what is holding up the redevelopment now. The Regal didn't just close its doors on a whim, a town council spokesman said. It faced a perfect storm of safety, compliance and financial challenges. The issue now is that the Regal Centre is effectively landlocked by Goldsmiths Lane car park, which is owned by South Oxfordshire District Council, which the town council has said has put in a blockade of the land. Wallingford Town Council's spokesperson said, "Our current attempts to convert our existing licence into a formal lease, which would allow Wallingford Town Council to remove the District Council from the land, have been extremely challenging. South Oxfordshire District Council is well aware of its strong negotiating position and has proposed highly unfavourable terms. Because local authorities must obtain fair market value, the District Council is effectively using their land as a ransom strip. Typical ransom payments demand 20 to 50% of the uplift in land value created by a development. Paying these fees would leave the Regal site with virtually zero residual value. Because of this lack of legal access and the massive ransom demands, the current effective value of the Regal site is effectively nil, especially compared to other development sites. As a result, the Town Council claims running the site solely for the community creates impossible challenges. The only way forward is in partnering with a developer to deliver a mixed-use building with flats and community space." Mayor of Wallingford, Nigel Hughes, said, "I think everybody in the town is quite dismayed by the speed that things are going at. It is encouraging that me and the Town Council are trying to move things forward, although it's been a slow and infuriating process, not helped by some of the partners on the site." A spokesperson for South Oxfordshire District Council said, "We have been engaging constructively with Wallingford Town Council regarding proposals for the Regal Centre. We continue to be open to considering access arrangements via Goldsmiths Lane car park." And there's a little photograph of the Regal Centre in Wallingford alongside the article.
So I'm Jane. Carnival, a fantastic success as hundreds join parade. There's a photograph on the front page of many children having a lot of fun. Hundreds of people turned out for a huge Wallingford Carnival parade, which was described as a fantastic success by organisers. A major event in the town's calendar, Wallingford Carnival returned on Saturday for a day filled with colour and excitement, in a truly community-centred event. The event-themed Wallingford Rocks began on the Kynecroft, followed by a spectacular procession. Dozens of organisations, including businesses, schools, charities and other community groups, entered wonderfully decorated floats, which paraded through the streets and were cheered on by spectators lining the route. On the Kynecroft, there were more than 40 stalls, with food and drink, ice cream, raffles, live music and dance performances, funfair rides, mini golf, go-karting, and a carnival bar run by the Cross Keys pub. Organisers expressed their gratitude, saying, "We would like to say a huge thank you to everyone who played a part in making our Wallingford Rocks-themed 2026 carnival such a fantastic success. There was such a high standard of entries, we really appreciate how much effort went into creating your floats. You were absolutely brilliant and made the carnival truly special. Thank you to everyone who came out to support the event. Seeing such huge crowds lining the streets was overwhelming and heartwarming." And there are accompanying a couple of pictures, one of a team of firemen collecting money in their buckets, and also some shire horses from Hook Norton Brewery.
Hello, I'm Kay, and yet another article from the front page. Supermarket will give shoppers choice. The arrival of a second budget supermarket in Didcot has been welcomed as planning officials gave the new store the go-ahead. Lidl has been given planning permission to build its ninth supermarket in Oxfordshire, despite concerns over flooding. Aldi opened in Didcot in 2015 and has a supermarket at the Jubilee Way roundabout. But shoppers in the town have had to wait over a decade for Lidl to follow. South Oxfordshire District Council has now backed plans by the German retailer for a new supermarket in Abingdon Road. Former Didcot Mayor Mocky Khan said, "This gives the residents of Didcot more choice, especially when you consider the cost of the living environment we have at the moment." The town is growing with more new homes being built, and with more growth, it's good to have a wide variety of supermarkets to fit all budgets. The plans for the new supermarket were first submitted in 2024. Didcot Town Council previously objected to the scheme on the grounds of a lack of flood risk mitigation measures, along with the County Council, who said there was insufficient information. But in a report by planning officers granting permission to the supermarket, those issues have now been addressed by Lidl. The officers said the proposals largely accord with the policies around planning, and more can be done to break up the car park with greenery. They said in a report, "Balanced against this policy conflict is the fact that this is a previously developed site, which is currently in a dilapidated state. The proposals represent a significant improvement on the current underutilization of the site and on its appearance." 34 residents had objected to Lidl's plans, highlighting concerns over extra traffic, there being no need for another supermarket in the town, and there being more appropriate locations to build in their view. Didcot already has an Aldi store just off Broadway and a Sainsbury's, M&S Food Hall and Asda. The nearest Lidl to the new site are in Wallingford and Abingdon. Three people wrote in to support the new Lidl, recognising the benefits of a discount food store and the further jobs it will create. Lidl has said its proposals for a Didcot supermarket would deliver 40 full-time equivalent jobs, as well as further employment during the construction phase. No opening date was given by the retailer, while the developer is currently on site progressing with the enabling works. A spokesman said, "We've seen demand for our affordable, high-quality products continue to rise in Oxfordshire, and we are committed to serving more communities in the area. Our new store will create around 40 new jobs and build on our continued growth.
Wine makes history with gold medal win. An award-winning wine from Oxfordshire has made history with a gold medal victory at the Decanter World Wine Awards 2026. In a landmark result, 100 Hills Hillside No. 3 2019 has become the country's first wine to claim a coveted gold medal at this year's competition, putting both the producer and Oxfordshire firmly on the global wine map. 100 Hills, which is based between Watlington and Henley, prides itself on high-quality sparkling wines crafted from carefully selected vineyard sites in the Chilterns. The historic win marks a major milestone for the county's fast-emerging wine industry and underlines how English producers are increasingly competing with established regions overseas. The result, announced in the 23rd year of the Decanter World Wine Awards, DWWA, came in a record-breaking year for UK producers overall. British wineries led the world for medals in the sparkling Magnum category and delivered their strongest performance to date when all awards were taken into account. Launched in 2004, DWWA has grown into what is billed as the world's largest and most prestigious wine competition, with more than 17,000 wines assessed by expert judges every year. The awards are widely regarded as a global benchmark for wine quality, thanks to their international reach, rigorous blind tasting process, and panel of specialists. Wines are judged on a 100-point scale, with medals ranging from the top tier, 50 best in show, and then platinum gold, all requiring scores of 95 points or more, followed by silver and bronze. This year's 50 best in show list represented just 0.3% of all wines tasted, underlining how hard it is to reach the highest level. The UK recorded one best in show, 2 platinum, 10 gold, 90 silver and 114 bronze medals, giving a total haul of 217 and making 2026 its best year yet for both top tier and overall medals. DWWA Regional Chair for the UK, Simon Field, MW, praised the standard of British wines, highlighting the quality of both fizz and still bottlings. Commenting on the quality of wine in the field, Mr. Field said, "It's extremely exciting as it is on the up. The sparklers are every bit as good as most champagnes, and the still wines, once an afterthought, are genuinely interesting and thoughtfully made." In the sparkling Magnum category, best in show went to Balfour Blanc de Blanc, Kent 2018, reinforcing the UK's growing strength in traditional method fizz. 100 Hills Hillside No. 3 2019 joined Hambledon's classic Cuvée Brut NV from Hampshire in securing gold for Magnums, while 9 silvers for UK Magnums added to the impressive tally. And there's a photograph of the rather pretty vineyard at 100 Hills.
Redknapp tackles council on England flag court ban. Again, following on from a front page photograph of Harry Redknapp. Football legend Harry Redknapp has slammed Oxfordshire County Council as it seeks to ban flying England flags on lampposts and public property through court action. The authority has applied to the High Court for an injunction to prevent the continued unauthorised placement of flags on or near roads as England's World Cup campaign ramps up. It called out the Raise the Colours group, which for the past year has been putting up flags across Oxfordshire, even after the council has taken them down. Oxfordshire County Council described the flags as distressing and issued a formal legal notice to the group in March, insisting they stop. Speaking on the Daily Tea podcast, host Camilla Tominey described the Liberal Democrat-led administration as spoilsports, before adding, "What is wrong with these people?" Harry Redknapp, who was on the podcast, reacted by calling the councillors stupid with idiotic opinions. Mr. Redknapp, who began his managerial career as an assistant coach to Bobby Moore at Oxford City in the late 1970s, said, "We are proud to be British. That is what we are. Fly the flags. Be proud of your country. Don't worry about these stupid councillors who have idiotic opinions. We are proud to be British. Don't be ashamed to be British." Council leader Tim Bearder declined to respond to the comments until after the High Court judge delivers his verdict on Tuesday. A civil injunction is a court order that requires an individual or organisation to stop specified activities. If granted, it would prohibit further unauthorised installations on or near the highway and allow the council to take enforcement action if the order is breached. Oxfordshire County Council said its staff have been subject to abuse and harassment by Raise the Colours members when they are taking the flags down. Mr. Bearder previously said this activity is not about national pride or unity, it is unlawful behaviour, which has caused fear and division within our communities. We have a clear responsibility to keep people safe and ensure our public spaces are welcoming and inclusive for everyone. Newspaper columnist Alison Pearson said, "I'm afraid as the World Cup progresses, the poor Lib Dems may be exposed to rather a lot of England flags." As of January the 15th, Oxfordshire County Council had spent £16,585 on removing 396 flags from streetlights. It had also received 223 complaints on the Fix My Street portal relating to flags being attached to the highways and on street furniture. This all came to a head, though, in March, when police arrested a 44-year-old man from Bromsgrove in Worcestershire for his part in putting up flags in Oxford's Abingdon Road. He was arrested on suspicion of causing racially and religiously aggravated harassment, alarm, or distress.
Objection to retrospective traveller's site application. Plans for a gypsy and traveller site on a farm in Watlington to get permission for a pitch which has already been installed have received 46 objections. A planning application was submitted to South Oxfordshire District Council by Oasis Land Management UK Limited on behalf of the applicant, Matthew Curtis, on May the 5th. It proposes changing the use of land at Forget-Me-Not Farm near Christmas Common in Watlington into a residential caravan suite for one gypsy or traveller family, including one static caravan and one mobile home and an ancillary amenity building. These changes have already taken place at the farm, but it is now seeking to get permission to retain development already carried out. More than a month into the application's consultation period, nearly 50 people have voiced their objections to the proposal, many of them anonymously. Many of the objectors cited the Chilterns status as an area of outstanding natural beauty, which has particular protections regarding what can be built on it, as a reason the council should refuse the plan. One commentator said, "Any new development could significantly impact the natural landscape and scenic views that our community treasures." The proposed site is located just before Christmas Common, next to open fields. "I am concerned about allowing caravans on this site, on this land, and the potential disruption to the local environment." Others objected because the site at Forget-Me-Not Farm has previously been the subject of several planning applications which saw owners seek permission to make it residential. These previous bids were refused by the District Council and the site was allowed for equestrian use only. One commentator said, "No one should be allowed to live on this land. This planning restriction should still stand, even though ownership has changed." Locals in Watlington also took issue with the fact that the application is retrospective as the static caravan, mobile home, hard-standing and amenity building had already been installed. Many said they felt allowing the application at this stage would set a dangerous precedent and reward a scheme which did not follow planning regulations. There was also one comment in support of the application which said, "I have been friends with this family for the past 14 years and have seen firsthand the kind, hard-working and supportive people they are. They have always lived a caring, family-orientated life and have supported those around them. I fully support their application and believe they would continue to be a positive and valued part of the local community. South Oxfordshire District Council continues to consider the application and a target decision date is set for June the 30th.
Cheaper options to help improve A34 considered. Low-cost options to make the A34 safer are being looked at by the National Highways. Recommendations such as new signage or road markings could be considered in a safety review that will be compiled into a report. Crashes and bad congestion is a constant source of headaches for the thousands of motorists who use the dual carriageway from Bicester through the spine of Oxfordshire and West Berkshire down to the M3 in Hampshire. This newspaper regularly reports on incidents on the A34 causing huge congestion and stop-start traffic. Lee Dillon, the MP for Newbury south of the Oxon border, has been pushing for safety improvements along the A34. Concerns chiefly revolve around short on-slip roads and poor visibility. In March, the government decided not to take forward the wider A34 north and south of Oxford scheme in the Road Investment Strategy 3, RIS 3. This meant there would be no chance of funding for big upgrades that could potentially bring greater change. Mr. Dillon said major upgrades had been swept aside, but there were still important questions to answer about what could be done to improve safety now. After following up with the Minister for Roads and writing to National Highways, I met with officials earlier this week to seek answers on the progress of their A34 safety study. There was some encouraging news. He said that National Highways confirmed the long-awaited study covering key junctions and slip roads will be finalised in the next few weeks. The study has examined a range of measures from larger interventions to lower cost measures such as signage, road markings and other operational changes to improve the route, he added. The next step is key. Once the study is complete, National Highways will present its recommendations to ministers of the Department for Transport, who will then decide which improvements should be taken forward. While funding remains tight and no changes aren't guaranteed, this is positive progress, and National Highways have acknowledged that there is scope for upgrades. So once that study is complete, I will be scrutinising the findings closely and lobbying ministers hard to ensure this study translates into practical measures on the route. He said motorists need a safer A34 and vowed to push to make it happen. Greg Stone, route manager for National Highways, previously told the BBC that safety is taken very seriously and pointed out resurfacing projects, upgraded safety barriers and hedge trimming in recent months. In answer to Didcot and Wantage MP Ollie Glover in the House of Commons, Transport Minister Simon Lightwood said the last road safety review took place on the A34 in 2017. He said other work included upgraded laybys, improving road signs and markings. And there are two photographs here of congestion and the follow-up to a crash on the A34.
Group threw eggs at cars. A gang of young people are wanted by police for throwing eggs at cars in Didcot before running away in an incident of antisocial behaviour. The youths threw what is believed to be eggs at vehicles in Station Road, Didcot, on Saturday at about 7:45 p.m. Egging vehicles between the roundabout and the railway near the bus stop, the group then ran off down a nearby alleyway, police said. Thames Valley Police are appealing for people who may have seen or captured footage of the incident to come forward. A spokesperson for the force said if you were in the area at the time, please check for dashcam footage, CCTV or doorbell footage.
Didcot 5 charity race to return this summer. A popular charity road race will return this summer and promises to be bigger and better than ever. The Didcot 5 will take place on Sunday, July the 5th, following a sellout event last year. Organised by Didcot Runners, the event aims to bring the community together for a morning of fitness, fun and fundraising while supporting two local charities. Sarah Rogers, chair of Didcot Runners, said, "The Didcot 5 is a real highlight of our calendar and we were absolutely delighted to sell out last year. It's not just about the running, it's about bringing the community together to support two incredible organisations that are so vital to Didcot. This year's race will raise funds for Earth Trust, which promotes well-being through green spaces, and the Didcot Emergency Food Bank, which supports people in crisis. The Didcot 5 features a flat, 5-mile road race suitable for both new and experienced runners. There is also a 2-mile fun run open to all ages and abilities." Ms. Rogers said, "The event offers something for everyone, from seasoned athletes chasing personal bests to newcomers looking for a fun and rewarding challenge. We're proud to support the invaluable work of Earth Trust and Didcot Emergency Food Bank, and we can't wait to see runners of all abilities come together to make a real difference."
RAF Benson hosts summer reception. RAF Benson's annual formal reception delivered an evening of tradition, hospitality and military excellence. The reception, held at the Oxfordshire base, brought together serving personnel, RAF representatives and community leaders for a blend of ceremony and refined hospitality. Guests gathered outside the officers' mess as the band of the RAF regiment set the tone with a musical performance beneath the summer evening sky. The ceremonial proceedings began with a display from the ceremonial flight, led by Flight Lieutenant Matt Thornton, followed by a general salute. 228 AC Squadron Chinook aircraft performed a low-level flypast, drawing all eyes skyward. The event was attended by a range of dignitaries, including the Mayor of Wallingford, Vincent Cavoni, and representatives from parish and county councils, schools and local organisations. Following the ceremony, guests enjoyed drinks and canapés on the terrace before addresses from Station Commander Wing Commander Alice Tierney and Commander Air Wing Wing Commander Johnny Longland. And there's an accompanying photograph of the annual formal reception with the officers taking salutes.
Volunteers keep Steam Rail Centre running. Volunteers have been working behind the scenes at Didcot Railway Centre to keep the tourist attraction running. The Steam Rail Centre next to Didcot Parkway attracts thousands of visitors every year. During steam days, trains are running and visitors can enjoy unlimited rides as well as calling in at other attractions, including the museum, engine shed, shop and cafe. When no steam trains are running, volunteers work hard to make sure the centre and its trains are ready to welcome guests. At the weekend, volunteers, including Sam, Ben and Mark, made sure 1897-built locomotive number 1340 Trojan was refilled with coal. The locomotive has a bunker inside the cab, which holds just half a tonne of coal. Andrew Snell was another volunteer working at the centre at the weekend. He looks after the exhibits in the Victorian transfer shed, including a 1910 Golden Sunbeam ladies' bicycle, which has recently joined the display. And there is an accompanying photograph of Sam, Ben and Mark at Didcot Railway Centre, along with locomotive number 1340 Trojan.
Appeal lodged over plan for 200 homes. An appeal has been lodged over controversial plans to build 200 homes just outside Didcot. As well as the homes, developer Obsidian Strategic also wants to build a special educational needs school on the land to the northeastern edge of the town. The proposed development would be part of the Garden Town project, which will result in 15,050 homes and 20,000 high-tech jobs delivered in the Greater Didcot area. The scheme was refused by South Oxfordshire District Council earlier this year. The development attracted objections from 18 people, as well as Long Whittenham Parish Council, Didcot Town Council, Campaign to Protect Rural England, Oxfordshire, Didcot Garden Town Team, and Whittenham Against Overdevelopment. Objector Janet Haylett of Westfield Road previously said, "Over the past few years, we have watched as Didcot has marched towards us with estates of monopoly houses and already taken over a significant part of the parish. The planning officer's report said, weighing against the development, it would permanently change the strong, undeveloped rural character of the site, extending the town of Didcot East of Lady Grove Road into the parish of Long Whittenham. It would substantially reduce the gap between Didcot, Long Whittenham and the national landscape, and would not protect and enhance the landscape, countryside and rural character. In conclusion, it is considered that the adverse impacts of the development would significantly and demonstrably outweigh the benefits. The scheme, therefore, fails to represent sustainable development, and the material considerations outlined above do not justify making a decision other than in accordance with the development plan. The developer has now appealed the decision, and the Planning Inspectorate will hold an inquiry on October the 7th this year. In the appeals documents, it said, the appellant's case is that the council cannot demonstrate a sufficient supply of deliverable housing land, and that as such, the most important policies in the development plan for determining the application, the subject of this appeal, i.e. those for the supply of land, are out of date, and that the appeal proposal represents sustainable development, which should be acceptable in any event. The appeal proposals will deliver new market and affordable housing, which are much needed to help meet the strategic growth requirements of South Oxfordshire. The provision for Ascend School will also provide a clear benefit. The appeal proposals will further develop significant environmental enhancement of the site, and will demonstrably provide a biodiversity net gain to the area and an improved landscape edge to the northeast of Didcot. The appeal proposals will deliver economic benefits for the area, including the provision of new jobs.
Cancer survivor Neil urges safety in sun. A former holiday rep from Oxfordshire who was told he could have just months to live after receiving his third skin cancer diagnosis is urging people to enjoy the sun safely this summer. Neil Sammons was diagnosed with melanoma, the most serious form of skin cancer, in 2001 and 2017 and was treated with surgery. But on New Year's Eve 2020, after the COVID-19 pandemic delayed his regular scans, the operations manager discovered that his melanoma had returned and spread. The 63-year-old father of three from Blueberry near Didcot said, "Being told I had stage 4 melanoma left me in absolute disbelief, and then when it sank in I thought, wow, this is serious. I had a few dark days but then knew I had to fight it. Thankfully, due to advances in research, I was given a type of treatment called immunotherapy, which was a game changer for me. Now I'm doing well and only require yearly scans. Mr. Sammons is speaking out as new analysis from Cancer Research UK reveals annual cases of melanoma skin cancer in the southeast have risen above 3,200, among the highest recorded in the region. Backing the charity's sun safety campaign with Nivea Sun, the travel specialist is highlighting growing concern over UK melanoma cases projected to reach a record 26,500 a year by 2040. Mr. Salmon said, as a young holiday rep, awareness of the risks was lower then. Now we know that most cases of skin cancer here and abroad are preventable, so I hope I can encourage people to take precautions. It's natural to want to make the most of warmer days, but sun protection isn't just for holidays, and it doesn't mean missing out. It just means taking care wherever you are. Despite my own diagnoses, I know that you can still enjoy warmer days by taking three simple steps. Seek shade, cover up, and apply sunscreen regularly and generously. After his emotional cancer journey, Mr. Sammons has joined forces with Cancer Research UK and Nivea Sun to share advice and tips on how to enjoy the sun safely. And there's a photograph of Neil Sammons, who survived stage 4 melanoma and is urging people to protect their skin.
Residents asked to shape parish changes. South Oxfordshire residents are again being asked to have their say on proposed changes to local parish governance. South Oxfordshire District Council has launched a second public consultation on final proposals for parish boundaries, councillor numbers and ward arrangements in several towns and parishes across the district. Maggie Philippova-Rivers, leader of the council, said, "We had a great response to our initial survey and made several changes following the comments we received. We're now giving residents the opportunity to have their say on the updated proposals before they are finalised, ready for the 2027 elections. Community governance arrangements play a vital role in ensuring that local councils reflect the communities they serve, so it's important that people have their say. The recommendations include increasing the number of parish councillors in Ewelme and Stoke Row, adjusting warding arrangements in Didcot, Henley and Tane, and revising parish boundaries between Sherburne and Purton and between Tame and Great Haseley. If approved, the changes would come into effect in time for the May 2027 local elections. Residents can review the full proposals and share their views through an online survey. The consultation is open until 11:59 p.m. on Thursday, the 30th of July.
Retirement Village renews sponsor deal. Retirement Village has renewed its sponsorship of a walking football club. Widmore Park in Sonning Common, Oxfordshire, is once again backing Rotherfield United Walking Football Club and will provide two new goalposts as well as tournament shirts for the entire squad as part of its sponsorship. The support builds on a growing partnership, which has previously included sponsorship of a charity music event to help raise funds for the club's nominated charities. Ian Beale, a member of Rotherfield United Walking Football Club, said, "Sponsorship from Inspired Villages has been a very welcome boost to our club. We are a thriving walking football club, but Inspired Villages' support enabled us to buy new goals and a set of great new shirts which are used in monthly league matches. As we celebrate our 10th anniversary, we are looking to continued success and fun future years too. Widmore Park, owned and operated by Inspired Villages, is set to open this summer." And there is a photograph here of the Rotherfield United Walking Football Club, some of whom are wearing their new strip, bright yellow. And if I've counted correctly, there seem to be at least 30 people in the picture. So obviously a popular thing.
Vineyard unveils own label, Wine Rage. A vineyard in the county has unveiled its first label English wines. Yew Tree Vineyard, a family-run estate in West Hagbourne, near Didcot, has announced the launch of three wines, Bacchus, Ortega, and a rosé, nearly a decade after planting its first vines in 2015. The wines made their debut at the English Wine Week Festival in Henley at the weekend. Ed and Jem Mitchum, founders of Yew Tree Vineyard, said, "Yew Tree has been a dream for a very long time. When we first planted the vines in 2015, the idea of one day seeing our own name on the bottle felt both exciting and a long way off. The 2025 harvest was the year everything came together. The weather was incredible, the grapes were exactly where we needed them to be, and we knew this was the moment to take the next step. The vineyard, planted on land that's been in Ed's family for four generations, began after Ed returned from a trip to New Zealand in 2007, inspired to pursue viticulture." And there's a lovely photograph of a beautiful black Labrador dog set against the background of the Yew Tree Vineyard.
Vegan-friendly cafe launches a new site. A plant-based cafe has launched a new site at Signal Yard in Milton Park, becoming the site's first food and beverage operator. Planted Plates, founded by Didcot entrepreneur Henna Afzal, began as a food truck at the park's street food pop-up event, Milton Feast, in 2021. After 5 years of steady growth, the business has moved from its first bricks and mortar site on Eastern Avenue to a larger unit at Signal Yard, marking a return to its roots within the Milton Park community. Ms. Afzal said, "When I started Planted Plates, I simply wanted to create food that people genuinely look forward to eating. For me, it's always been about flavour first. You don't have to be vegan to enjoy great food, and we've been incredibly lucky to build up such a supportive community of customers over the last few years. Milton Park has been part of our journey from the beginning." Planted Plates offers a daily changing menu of plant-based breakfasts, lunches, pastries, and barista coffee. The new space includes a larger seating area designed to encourage people to meet, work, and socialise throughout the day. Ms. Afzal added, "Starting at Milton Feast gave us the opportunity to test ideas, build a following, and grow the business. Opening at Signal Yard feels like a full circle moment, and we're excited to welcome both familiar faces and new customers through the door. I'm incredibly proud of how far the business has come. This move gives us the opportunity to expand our offer, grow the team, and continue building something that people genuinely enjoy being part of. The cafe also provides vegan catering services to businesses across Milton Park using a zero CO2 delivery vehicle. Ms. Afzal's brother Jack has now joined the team as the company looks to recruit further staff. The opening of Planted Plates is part of Milton Park's £14 million investment in Signal Yard, which aims to create a new social and retail destination for the park's 280-plus companies and the wider community, and there is a photograph of entrepreneur Henna Afzal in the cafe.
Pothole fillers come under fire. Workers out on Oxfordshire highways filling potholes have been hit, sworn at, and spat on while on the job, and it's getting worse, according to an infrastructure boss. The county, which has received repeated calls for action on its highways, including from the Prime Minister, sees more than 1,000 emergency pothole reports a week. According to the County Council, there have been a major rise in repairs, with the number of crews increased from 7 to 25 to tackle its pothole backlog. Since January 2026, contractor M Group has repaired more than 33,000 highway defects, compared to 37,042 potholes filled in the whole of 24-25. The rise in repairs has also come with rising abuse towards the people carrying out the work. Richard Lovewell, M Group Business Director, said, It just makes me really, really sad. I think what makes me even sadder is the guys expect it now, and they just think it's part of the job, and nobody should come to work to be spat at and abused. He explained, these guys work very, very hard in all weathers and all environments. We appreciate that if we're out with traffic management, it can cause some inconvenience, but there's people getting hit, there's people getting sworn at, and we're doing everything we possibly can. We've brought in body-worn video, and we use static CCTV, anything that we can do. He added, we recently had a high-speed police chase come through one of our sites. It's one of the major hazards. It's incursions. We obviously shut roads off. People don't take any notice of that. And if that's their shortcut, that's their shortcut. What they've got to realise is that they're putting lives in danger by doing that. Let's be honest. If you worked in a bank, you wouldn't expect people to line up and swear at you all day. Mr. Lovewell wants to address public perception about pothole roadworks, saying, if we could, we'd resurface every road in Oxfordshire. Obviously, as a contractor, we get given certain budgets. He added, if a pothole fails for any reason, from a workmanship issue or anything, we repair that free of charge, and that's our risk. I don't think people know that. He also highlighted some of the better experiences the workers have while out on the job. Young children are often fascinated by the roadworks. Mr. Lovewell said members of his work gangs take the time to chat to the kids, tell them what they're doing. He said kids especially like the Dragon Patcher, a huge, big, fire-breathing pothole machine. And there's a photograph of a smiling Robert Lovewell out on the roads with his contractors working very hard behind him.
Riders jump for joy at new BMX track. A new BMX pump track in Harwell saw more than 100 youngsters take to their bikes to ride the course as it opened for the first time. Harwell Pump Track opened in Harwell Recreation Ground on Sunday, June the 21st, when the community gathered for an official ribbon cutting of the popular new facility by some keen young riders, where Parish Council Chair Vaughan Humphreys gave a speech. Construction for the off-road cycling track began in March, and despite facing some setbacks, such as when motorcyclists broke into the unfinished track and caused damage, has now been successfully completed. A spokesperson for Harwell Parish Council said, "This is a remarkable achievement and a genuine community effort. It was initiated by the Parish Council, but it came together through the dedication of our officers, particularly our deputy clerk, volunteers and individual families, companies who gave their time and expertise generously, and our remarkable partners at OX Trails. The whole community can be proud of what has been built here." Council Chair Mr. Humphreys added, "It was a fantastic day for Harwell."
Now, the Harking Back column by Emma Brennan, who is an award-winning journalist and former newspaper editor with a fondness for yesteryear. Remembering the gruelling days of SAS-style PE lessons, there was no real escape from the terror of running cross-country and playing netball or hockey as a child. When I look back at my school days, I can't honestly say I remember much of it with fondness. Although I was academically bright enough to do well in lessons, I was relieved when the bell rang, signalling the end of the day. Through hours of stuffing my head full of facts, I kept myself going by thinking about what I would do as soon as I arrived home. Some of my friends enjoyed school, but one lesson filled most of us with dread, PE, or physical education, to give it the correct name. Quite what was educational about it is beyond me, given that I learned very little other than how to survive unscathed. I still don't fully understand the rules of hockey or netball, despite having been forced to play both for years. I was an active child, so it wasn't as if I was incapable. It was just the way PE was structured in most comprehensive schools during the 1970s and 80s, and the limited range of activities, which made it a test of endurance for many. Every lesson would be organised with military precision, akin to an army training camp. And woe betide anyone who dared try to get out of PE on medical grounds, they would undergo an SAS-style interrogation. The activity that struck terror into most hearts was cross-country running. I'm told youngsters still do cross-country of sorts, but I can guarantee it isn't anything like the kind we were subjected to. Running was one of my fortes, but the conditions made cross-country into an expedition even Bear Grylls would struggle with. We would do cross-country whatever the weather, and we didn't wear any special kit either, just our usual t-shirts and shorts, largely unsuitable for the route. We would run for miles across water meadows, through woods and uneven fields, basically places you'd avoid unless you were prepared to suffer a twisted ankle. And even if you did sustain a sprain and tried to use it like a blighty wound to escape cross-country torture, you would be told to walk or limp the rest of the way. And to prevent the tardy from running at tortoise-like speed, cross-country always took place at the end of the day, so you'd be wasting your own time if you dallied and risked missing the school bus. How crafty was that from the PE teachers? Our route cut through the centre of the water meadows, inhabited by a fearsome-looking herd of Highland cows. It also veered unbelievably close to the sewage works. If dodging cows through boggy terrain wasn't torture enough, the route forced us to jump over a sewer outflow, a considerable leap for a 10-year-old. As a relatively small child, I'm surprised I never fell in, but I think I was propelled by sheer willpower. On every run, some poor soul would fail to make it entirely across, losing their footing on the slippery bank. Those that succumbed to the sewer then had to do the rest of the race soaking wet and whiffing high. Needless to say, even those that evaded the sewer returned with chattering teeth, freezing cold, wet, and plastered in mud. It wasn't like the non-cross-country PE lessons were great either. If the PE teachers didn't want to get cold, we would do circuit training in the school gym, which included wielding aloft a medicine ball despite it weighing a ton. The circuit included balancing on beams, vaulting over wooden obstacles, and climbing a rope to the top of the gym more than 20 feet up. In between, we would be prevented from catching our breath by commands to do umpteen star jumps and squats. The only team sports open to girls in those days were netball or hockey. Football and rugby were strictly for the boys. I loathed netball because I was small and usually placed in the highly unsuitable position of goal defence. Even with my arms stretched fully above me, I could not prevent opponents with Amazonian proportions, always in the goal shooter position, from simply plopping the ball in the net directly over my head. Hockey was equally onerous, with at least one child ending the session with bruised shins. We had no protective equipment in those days. My good friend, who excelled at hockey, even managed to get her front tooth knocked out by an overzealous opponent wielding a hockey stick too high. It wasn't until we were older that PE lessons became tolerable, with options to play badminton or tennis instead. We were even allowed to join the boys for basketball, if we were lucky.
And now we come to several items about what's on in the area. Evie May's Speed Queen charity cars and coffee. South Oxfordshire Car Club are running a charity event this month, raising money for Helen and Douglas House. Evie May's Speed Queen charity cars and coffee takes place on the 28th of June, 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. at Howbury Park, Wallingford. There will be a huge selection of incredible cars coming along from amazing local businesses such as Girardos, The Real Mini Company, and Pet Royale Restorations. Tickets are only a tenner per car, and you can have as many in the car as you want. So please head down and join us all to raise as much money for an incredible cause. These people really make a difference. National Theatre Live, Playboy of the Western World. Catch a filmed live performance of the stage play at nearby Cholsey Great Hall on Friday the 3rd of July at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are £10. Then we have Brightwell Come Sotwell Village Fete. Enjoy a family fun day, food and live performances just outside of Wallingford on Saturday the 4th of July. This very traditional village fete will be held in the gardens of Sotwell House at the very centre of the village. It has glorious formal topiary, an orchard, a tennis court and even a moat with ducks. All the proceeds go to support clubs and societies in the village. Consider street parking only, or take the number 33 or 33A bus and walk down Bell Lane to what three words? Officer, Clark, Sisters. Well-behaved dogs on a short lead are welcome, but please don't forget the poo bags. Ayres House Studios Summer Fun Day and Makers Market. Browse local stalls and festivities on Sunday the 5th of July. Discover one of Wallingford's hidden creative hubs at the first Ayres House Studios Summer Fun Day and Makers Market. Located behind the Esso Garage on Station Road, Ayres House Studios is home to a thriving community of artists, makers and creative businesses. This family-friendly event offers visitors the chance to explore the studios, meet local creatives, and enjoy a day packed with creativity, shopping, and community spirit. Browse a wide range of stalls featuring artwork, handcrafted gifts, ceramics, jewellery, clothing, cakes and bakes, alongside local organisations, including beekeepers and Wild About Wallingford. There will also be free activities for all ages throughout the day, making it an enjoyable and affordable outing for families, friends and visitors. Admission is £1, with proceeds supporting the Ayres House Studio Residents Association and helping to fund future community events and creative projects. And then, on at the Corn Exchange Wallingford very soon, Les Liaisons Dangereuses, a National Theatre Live performance starring Leslie Manville and Aidan Turner. This live screening starts at 7 p.m. Please arrive in good time. Admission to the auditorium once the show has begun will be at an appropriate point in the performance. And this is on Sunday the 28th of June and Monday the 29th, all starting at 7 p.m. But you do need to book. Tickets, adults £18, seniors £15 and under 18s £8.75. BAFTA award winner Leslie Manville joins Aidan Turner in a striking new staging of Christopher Hampton's celebrated adaptation of the classic novel, where among the glittering salons of the super rich, one misstep can mean ruin.
The next item is Rally. Andy Crockett tells us how Woodcote Rally celebrates 60 years of steam, vintage vehicles and family entertainment on the 11th and 12th of July. The roar of engines, hiss of steam and the smell of fairground food will once again thrill visitors as the Woodcote Rally celebrates its 60th anniversary this year, a milestone edition of one of the region's most beloved family festivals. Taking place on the 11th and 12th of July, the rally returns to its familiar field off Church Lane, Ipston, OX106BZ, bringing together an extraordinary celebration of steam, vintage and veteran transport, and countryside entertainment for all ages. Across the weekend, visitors can expect a spectacular lineup of exhibits, including large and miniature steam engines, stationary engines, classic cars, motorbikes, tractors, military vehicles, commercial displays, and intricate model engineering. The main arena will showcase live displays throughout both days, alongside a dedicated tractor working area that brings agricultural heritage vividly to life. Beyond the engines, the rally is packed with traditional festival charm. A large craft marquee will showcase handmade goods from local makers, while the surrounding country area offers hands-on demonstrations and attractions. These include displays from the Wildlife Trust, the Cholsey and Wallingford Railway, wood turning and willow crafts, circus skills with Bertie slippers, plus birds of prey demonstrations, a children's petting farm, guide dogs for the blind, and a model fairground display. Families will also find a bustling fun fair, while live music fills the main stage throughout the day and into the evening. Visitors can relax in the adjacent bar area, offering real ales, lagers, craft beers, wines, spirits, and soft drinks, alongside a wide range of food stalls catering to every taste. Since its beginnings in 1964, the Woodcote Rally Committee have raised an impressive £555,000 for local charities and good causes, cementing the Highlights' reputation as South Oxfordshire's premier community-run event of its kind. This year's programme includes special early evening openings. From 6 p.m. on Friday, 10th of July, locals are invited to enjoy free entry and entertainment. Food, drink and discounted fairground rides will be available. On Saturday, 11th of July, entry is free from 5:30 p.m. Advance tickets are available at a discounted rate at woodcuterally.org.uk, where you can also find full details and travel information. The site is served by the X40 Thames travel bus route, with stops on the A4074 nearby. Organisers are also appealing for volunteers and marshals to support the event, offering free entry, refreshments and the chance to contribute to a much-loved local tradition. 60 years on, the Woodcote Rally remains a true celebration of heritage, community and countryside fun. So do join the fun. Wallingford Guided Town Walks offer something for everyone. Led by members of the Wallingford Historical and Archaeological Society, tours meet beneath the Town Hall at 11 a.m. every Saturday until the end of September. It's £5 per person for a tour lasting between 90 and 120 minutes. Cash on the day, just turn up. On Wednesday, 10th of June, Joe Trevorrow will explore hidden archaeology, cave paintings in Guyana, further discoveries, and that will be at the TWAS meeting in St Mary's Church at 8 p.m. And there's more information beyond this on the TWAS, T-W-H-A-S website or the museum website. I'm reading from the Benson Bulletin, and this is Benson's Inns, The Crown. All the other inns in this series have been lost inns, but here we have an old coaching inn which is still very much alive, The Crown, with a date plaque of 1709 on it, but with buildings believed to date from the 17th century, The Crown has been with us for over 300 years. The Crown's earliest known landlord was a William Pleasant, whose daughter Sarah married William Costar in 1785, and the Costars then ran the business for many years. The Crown was a mail inn as well as a posting inn, and began to prosper when the coach route through the village was diverted from Mill Lane, Coachway, to follow the High Street and London Road. Business boomed when the route was turnpiked in 1736, and Benson became the first major staging post out of Oxford for changing horses. The Crown was ideally located to take advantage. The census returns for 1841 and 1851 showed how a local surrounding infrastructure supported the Crown, with coach builders, repairers, wheelwrights, smiths all nearby in Benson. By about 1840, under Richard Costar, when the Crown received an upgrade, The inn had stabling for 16 horses, with its own paddock. Coaches ran daily to London, Oxford, Gloucester, Stroud and Cheltenham. And there were 3 mail coaches daily. But the railway into Wallingford changed all that. As the railway network grew, the old coaching industry declined, and the inns which supported them, that industry suffered. The old inns fought back, aiming at new markets, the tourist industry. But slowly, one by one, they failed and disappeared. Except for the Crown. The Crown survived, and an advert in 1902 by innkeeper W.W. Raywood perhaps showed why. Electric launches for hire, electric cars and batteries charged, with every convenience for hunting, shooting, golf and boating parties. The Crown garage always open, cars stored and cleaned, petrol and inspection pit. Today, the Crown is still a hotel, a restaurant and a pub rolled into one. It still caters for visitors and locals, and once again has charging for electric cars. And that was written by Dave Rushton from the Benson History Group.
The bridge brings us news from wild Oxfordshire. Insect Week. Tiny creatures, big impact. From the 22nd to the 28th of June, the Royal Entomological Society's Spotlight Week is a celebration of all things insect. They may be small, but insects make a big difference to nature recovery. And these small critters really do make all the difference. There are more than 24,000 species in the UK alone, and they can be found in almost every habitat. Their jack-of-all-trades role spans pollinators, predators, pests, parasites, and prey. And the study of insects has long been central to conservation, food production, medicine, and ecology. At Wild Oxfordshire, insects are essential to our Yellow Wagtail Partnership project, established in 2020 by patron Dr. Robin Buxton. The partnership works with the Earth Trust, Church Farm Partnership, and Lower Farm to learn and communicate as much as possible about the impact of different land management techniques, both on this species and on the wider environment. As a migrant species, insects are a vital part of a yellow wagtail's diet. However, recent changes in farming practice and other human impacts on the landscape have led to habitat and insect declines, harming yellow wagtail populations. They now find themselves on the conservation red list.
With that item, we've come to the end of this week's recording. So from a very warm recording venue, and hoping that the weather conditions improve by next week, please look after yourselves and keep cool as best as you can, but wishing you well until next week. From us all here, it's
goodbye. Goodbye.